Welcome to the Married to Board Games podcast, episode 38.
Welcome. Hello, one and all.
I'm Laura.
I'm Spencer.
And we're so glad that you are joining us for this episode. It's a very exciting one that, man, what a great time this episode's been and for us. So, I mean, for you guys, I just can't wait.
What a time to be alive.
Right. But before we get to all that excitingness, I know there are some people waiting on the edge of their seat to find out the results.
Yes.
Of our drawing to win Empires of the Void 2, the deluxe edition from Red Raven Games.
Yes, and we're so thankful for Red Raven Games and them offering this prize and for them sponsoring our past two episodes. So thanks again, Red Raven Games. You're awesome, and you gave an awesome prize.
Yes, yes, you definitely did. And so first off, thank you to everybody also who responded to our survey. You gave us a lot of great feedback that we're going to look over all of that.
Yeah, and we'll discuss that and show our findings in the next episode.
Right. But for now, what you're really wanting to know is who won the drawing and who gets to have a deluxe copy of Empires of the Void 2.
Yes.
And the winner is Jason Gross.
Yeah, Jason, congratulations.
Way to go, Jason. So, we're pumped for you that you're going to get to experience this game because, man, it is awesome.
It's out of this world. How many times have I done that joke?
I don't know, but I think you need to insert a sad trombone there. So, again, thank you to everybody who responded to our survey. And you know what? You can be watching for Empires of the Void 2 to come out to retail.
It's already out.
Oh. You know what? Empires of the Void 2 is out for retail right now. So, I mean, if you're really wanting that game, go pick up a copy because it's definitely worth it. So for now, that business is done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on. We have a special guest on today's episode.
Yes.
An extremely special guest that, I mean, wow, what a great guy and what a legacy he will leave behind in board gaming. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Rob Davio. He is responsible for really kind of launching the whole legacy movement in board gaming, contributing to several of those first legacy games that were ever available on the market. And he's going to tell you about what he used to do. So let's just jump into the interview. All right. So we are here with our special guest from Restoration Games. This is Rob Davio. Say hello to all the nice people.
Hello, nice people.
And they are nice, aren't they?
They're very nice. So actually, that was Rob.
Every single one of them is nice, which is why I'm on the show.
Exactly. Yes. Hey, fans, take that.
We promised Rob he'd only be talking to nice people, and there you go.
That's excellent. Right.
So, Rob, here you are. You're a guest on your show, but some people may not know who you are. Imagine that. So why don't you tell us and those nice people out there who you are and what do you do?
I am a game designer, and I have been a game designer professionally full-time for 20 years, or almost 20 years. Much of that time was spent at Hasbro, so Parker Brothers, Milton Bradley. That was from 98 to 2012. And then for the past 6 years, I've been on my own. Mostly, you know, I set out that I was just going to design my own games like I'd been doing and sort of licensing them to publishers, the standard route. And then a couple years ago, a person said, do you want to found a game company? And I said, no, I don't. And then he said, wait. We only take old games that are out of print and then sort of restore them and kind of like do these reboots. And I said, actually, I changed my mind. That's a wonderful idea. So for the past couple of years, I've also been the chief restoration officer at Restoration Games, which is mostly why I'm here tonight.
Well, I have to say that is when I saw the announcement of this new company, I thought, what a brilliant idea.
Yes, definitely.
Because, I mean, it's like been such a big thing in our culture about, you know, restoring things, you know, furniture and, you know, reboots like movies, mm-hmm. new versions of movies and stuff.
Very true. And TV shows.
Yeah. So why not games? Like it's a perfect medium for them.
Definitely.
Especially because a lot of that hits on a nostalgia aspect. Mm-hmm. And we have those memories of these games from our childhood that, you know, we remember a lot more fondly than they actually are when you get them to the table these days. So what an awesome idea to start a company like
that. I can take zero credit for any of the idea. I was Justin was my lawyer. He's a lawyer by trade, and he looked at contracts for me and gave legal advice. And then he said, "I'm selling my business to start a publishing company." And I'm like, "Please, no, there's a ton of publishers." And when he said the idea, I was like, "Whoa, that's great. I like that." And he thought of me because a lot of what I did at Hasbro for 14 years was take sort of these classic brands like Risk or Clue or Monopoly or Scrabble or Life. I've worked on all these brands, and they would be like, "Can you do something different with it? Can you modernize it? Can you put a license on it?" So kind of taking a game and looking at what makes it tick and then figuring out how to take it in a different direction is how I've kind of defined my career. I'm not a person who necessarily creates things out of whole cloth. I mean, I have and I do and I will, but a lot of my body of work is based on sort of taking something and just putting a different lens on it. So it's been a great fit.
That's really cool. And, you know, there are those games out there that just need just that right touch. And you can definitely see in the games that we've played of your designs how much of an impact that's made.
Right. Yes. So, like, we have both Stop Thief and Downforce, and they're just such a blast to play.
They really are.
And we even have, like, we posted on our Instagram account, one of our friends, his uncle, still had one of the first Stop Thief.
Yeah, the original release of Stop Thief. And it was so cool to see that.
Because he took just meticulous care of it. Mm-hmm. And so it was still almost like mint condition.
That's great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
It really is. And
Spencer's friend whose uncle owns that, and he grew up playing that game. Mm-hmm. And so getting to see this new implementation with using the app and even going to co-op mode like y'all just released, super exciting getting to share that with him. And then also with Downforce, I know that whenever we've been introducing this to new gamers, which this has been a good one for that situation, when I'm reading off of the box how it lists all the different titles that it has been under before, that people go, "Oh yeah, I've heard of that game. I remember that game."
Yeah.
And then now we get to show them, well, this is now Downforce, and they do this bidding and you bet on who's going to win and all this. That's a lot of fun.
It is. And what I think is really neat too, is that you're also introducing these old games to a new generation that maybe not have played the earlier versions before.
Well, I mean, but sure. Yeah.
Both Downforce and Stop Thief, we haven't played Indulgence yet, but both of those have been hits with everyone that we play, and they've been, you know, awesome experiences for us when we play them. So really, we're really excited about, you know, the future for Restoration games. So we just wanted to add a little personal touch in there about our experience with the games and
I really appreciate that, because I work from my house with my wife, and she's also on the restoration team, and she's kind of like the studio manager. She was just saying today how she's super detail oriented and I'm super sort of just like the ragged creative person, and how it works together. But, you know, other than conventions, it's really hard to know what we do, how it impacts the world. Right. So we sit here and we do this stuff, and I stress out making the game, and then she stresses out doing the production on the game, and then it goes off into the wild. So it's always nice to hear this, like, sort of like to complete the circuit, to hear the feedback that the game went out and people enjoyed it and they introduced it and they had a good time. So thank you for sharing that, because it's this weird thing where it feels like it's sort of this one way trip. Like, I just sit at the desk that I'm sitting at now and go, "Okay, I think I'm done. Hopefully people like this a year from now." And it's sort of a strange, like, sort of shouting into a well existence sometimes. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. And thank you for putting your little touch on those games. It's very much appreciated.
Well, and I especially enjoyed with Stop Thief the small little bio of the creator of the game and an update on what he's doing now.
Dr. Doyle.
That is
just so cool.
I don't want to hijack this segment because we could go on and on, but I went to his house last summer to get him to autograph some games. It was part of a Kickstarter stretch goal. And he's like in his early 80s. And I'm thinking, like, I'll swing by. I'll leave like half hour, 40 minutes, make some chit-chat, sign the games. I stayed like an hour and a half. I was late to my next meeting. I would have stayed there for 2 days. This guy's the most fascinating guy. I took out the game. I started to explain like what we were doing. I got about 2 seconds in. He's looking at the board. He's like, oh, I see what you did. And then explains to me everything I had done in the design. And he's like, you did this, and you did this, and you did this. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Good job. Okay. And I'm like, whoa, I'm this guy. Like, his mind works at light speed. His house is filled with gadgets. It's like 3 stories of just techno stuff. He had maybe 30 screens in his house, like all networked to each other, just talking and computers and voice activated stuff. It was amazing. So that guy.
Wow.
Yeah, I need to go back and hang out with him again.
That is awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's less of a house and more like a lair, right? Like where he's just gets it was great.
And I love that he has gotten to see the way that his game has evolved under your hands.
And I bet he never imagined that would happen.
And he it sounds like he appreciates what it's become.
He did. Like, we reached out to him when we were starting and asked. And he's like, yeah, I'm not doing anything with it. And, like, it was one of the easiest deals that we could, you know, possibly imagine. We licensed it and, you know, struck a business deal. And he's like, yeah, I don't need it. No one's asked about it in 30 years. And so it was great.
That is awesome. Well, cool. Well, let's move on to the main reason why we're here, right? This is like, okay, I'm trying to think of some real funny like introduction, but it's not coming to me. So we'll just talk Fireball Island.
Fireball Island. Okay. I was wondering what I thought it might be like. We were trading like burger recipes or knitting. I didn't know where. But yeah, Fireball Island is a fantastic thing to talk about. I like it.
If you have a good burger recipe, please send it our way. We'd love to hear it because we love burgers.
Right now, we need to talk. Okay, Fireball.
Just make sure you have enough fat in the beef. That's all. Don't go lean. Anyway.
Oh, there we go. That's what we've been doing wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Yeah. So, Fireball Island, for our listeners who may not know what this game is, can you just give a brief explanation of the original version of this game?
Yeah, the original version came out in the mid to late 80s and was an awesome mid to late 80s game where you played an adventure on a 3D plastic island. You were this little miniature and you're running around and you're trying to steal a gem or a jewel. I think it was called a jewel. And you were trying to be the first one to get it to the docks. And meanwhile, every once in a while, the other players would roll marbles at you, fireballs, and would knock you over and then laugh at you. It was probably your brother or that kid down the street, you know, the one you didn't like, but you had to invite him over. Yeah. And it was just this sort of kinetic, perfect late 80s moment of awesomeness. And when we started Restoration Games, we asked and we continue to ask, hey, what games do you want us to bring back? This was by far the number one game. So we spent, and when I say we, I mean Justin, not me at all. Justin spent a year getting the rights to it. And then we kind of turned ourselves loose and like, how can we make this work in 2018? And that's why I'm here, I guess, to talk about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so I never owned this game, but I remember very vaguely playing with it. I don't think I actually played the game, but it was more about just rolling, rolling the marbles down the tracks and seeing what would happen. And so I'm so excited. Like, when this was announced, that was such an exciting moment.
It's all about the marbles and the tracks and true confession. So we just got the latest version, like, actually on the real plastic, the final or near final version of the game. Mm-hmm. 20 seconds before I got on here, I walked by my dining room table and rolled 4 marbles just to see what they would do. And I'm like, really? It's like 9:30 at night. Stop working. Because it's just still fun to do. And we mixed it up. And I'll get into that in a minute. So, well, like, the marbles are even more fun to roll down the hill for at least 2 reasons.
Yeah.
Right. So, with that, what were your challenges that you were facing in taking this out of the 80s and putting it into the now?
It had really big hair. No, I'm sorry. That's just an awful, awful...
Too much white rain hairspray.
Yeah, that is an awful, awful joke. But I was told that dad jokes would be good, so I'm trying to fit
it. It is my kind of joke.
It wasn't a pun. It was just right out there a dad joke. The issue that we're facing, and it wasn't much of an issue, it was a fun challenge, was this game is remembered as being very fast and very big and very kinetic and very destructive from the kids who played it or the adults who were kids at the time. And the island was big. It was like 24 inches by 18 inches. It wasn't particularly tall, and the marbles don't move particularly fast. I didn't play it as a kid. I was a little old for it. I was like in high school and college in its heyday. So I didn't have that visceral nostalgia. So when I played, I was like, huh, yeah, I see how this would have been cool when I was 9 or 10. And so our goal was to make the modern version as good as everyone remembered the original version being, which means it had to be bigger and it had to be taller and it had to be faster and it had to be crazier. And those were the goals that we set out to do. So we, instead of doing one big piece of plastic for the island, we have three separate plastic trays. So you put two next to each other, you stack the third one on top like you're stacking like a little pyramid. And that lets the island be taller. It's basically the same footprint as it was before, but it's twice as tall, which means the marbles go much faster. And then in the original game, the marbles went down these very predictable sort of troughs. And we thought, let's mix that up, because a lot of times you're like, ah, marble. And then you'd roll it and it would roll down and knock someone over. Like, yeah, that's exactly what it's done every time. And so we wanted it to add some mystery and some excitement. We were like, every time a marble goes down, how can everyone be kind of like drawn into the board? So we tried to create an island where the marbles had some unpredictability. There's this big idol on the top that spits marbles out. Not every time. Sometimes they come from different places. And instead of having one mouth like in the original game, he has three. And it's a little bit of a random generator as to where the marble comes out. Now, it comes out the front most of the time, but occasionally it comes out a side. And so that adds some surprise. And then there are trees on the island that have roots that stick out into the paths. And one of the things you can do is rotate these trees on your turn to try to either protect yourself or divert the marble to other people. So the same path will have different branches. Then we didn't make the troughs, like, we didn't make the walls all the way up. So occasionally the marble will jump the track. Not always.
Oh, no.
Right? It won't. I mean, very rarely it'll go off the entire board. But we're trying to keep it that you're not chasing marbles around your dining room floor. But no, it'll go down the same path. And every once in a while it gets to the bottom, this one particular path. And it just kind of goes whoop and goes over the wall and goes into the parallel trough. So between the tree roots, between the randomness, and also a lot of times the players flick the marbles to get them going. Not like flick with a thumb and finger, just like tap with a finger. And kind of just the speed and the orientation you get some of these marbles going gives them different spin, different velocity. These marbles are mostly predictable, but you get this sense of, okay, it's my turn. I'm going to launch a marble and I'm going to go for you. If I just knock, and then it goes this way and it bounces that way and it hits another marble and that marble rolls down. And so we were trying to get basically every time a marble rolled, everyone's drawn into the game. It is not a super serious game. It is a game of running around an island and getting knocked over by marbles. And we're like, let's not overthink this. Let's just make getting knocked over by marbles as awesome as humanly possible. And so that was our goal. And we spent big deal of the big part of the design time trying to get those islands and those marbles to work. And we're still tinkering. Now that we have it, we're still like, this wall needs to be just a little bit. And, you know, we got one more pass with the factory to kind of fine tune it.
Well, that's a perfect tagline for the game, then. The most fun you'll ever have being knocked over by marbles.
And you know what? It's factually true, which is the best part, right? Like,
it can be scientifically proven.
I think there are very few people who could argue against that. Yeah, no, I kept calling it a kinetic death machine, and people are like, no, you can't say that.
That's not very sexy.
No, well, I was very inspired by old Warner Brothers cartoons when I was thinking about it.
Oh, very
right. You know that you get flattened and then you stand up and you're like, oh, yes. You know. This means war, right? That sort of thing.
Oh, my gosh. That is too perfect. Now I'm picturing, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit in my head.
It's fireball season.
Please, Eddie. Right, that sort of thing.
Yes, when he gets flattened and you find out that Christopher Lloyd's attuned.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Oh, I could go into my, what was his name? Judge?
No.
Not Judge Dredd.
Right. It was Judge.
Not Judge something. Smalls. Right. That's Caddyshack. I can't remember what the judge was in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I can do the voice, but I can only do it at like 100 decibels, and no one needs that. So.
Well, on that note, how about we go back to Fireball Island?
Okay. So So, speaking of 100 decibels, that's the sound of a fireball rolling down the chimney. It's not loud.
It does have a nice clatter to it. It is kind of a nice, like, awesome. Like, it's not a deep noise. It's like a rattle and a clatter, but it's appealing. And we'll get into it, you know, pretty shortly. But when you launch 10 bees all at once, that makes a good noise. So.
So cool. So you talked about how from the original, you made the paths more unpredictable and make the marbles go faster. But as far as like the mechanisms go in the game, other than the marbles moving, what other changes did you make in the gameplay itself?
Yeah, we changed the gameplay and we changed the theme, and they kind of like work a little, you know, to work together. The original game, very 80s, very like high adventure in the age of Indiana Jones, right? Like it was sort of like you were this generic adventure, although you were wearing like a bike helmet and a backpack. Like it was weird. It was like you were sort of like a bike messenger who landed there. But the idea from the cover was very Indiana Jones, very Goonies. And so we kind of wanted to turn that on its head. And we were talking with the team and we're like, wouldn't it be funny if the island had just been sort of shuttered and abandoned after some sort of lawsuit had been brought against it for the burn-ins and stuff. And then it had been bought. And this is sort of the grand reopening of Fireball Island. It's almost like a sequel. But instead of being an adventure island, it's this beautiful island resort where you can spend the day in adventure. And at the end of the day, eat at our 5-star restaurants. And it's a complete load of crap from the company that's doing it. It is a death trap still. And so we basically said, and so instead of being this adventure, all the little figures are terrified tourists who have been dropped onto the island. And the idea is you're dropped onto the island from a helicopter. And it's supposed to be almost like if you're doing like summit skiing, like, hey, we'll get you later. And the helicopter takes off because it's really smart and doesn't want to be near the island. And you realize, uh-oh, I should have read the user agreement. Like, what did I just sign up for? And instead of being one path that you follow to the end, you've got this network of paths. And the way the game works is you have to run around the island and you're trying to collect these postcards or snapshots from the three different parts of the island. And once you get like three pictures of scenic vistas and get back to the helicopter pad, the helicopter will come pick you up. And then everyone else, once one person summons a helicopter, the helicopter comes in two turns and everyone has two turns to like get back to be picked up. And along the way, besides getting the pictures, you can collect any treasures you can find. And there is a gem that is worth a lot of points, which is an homage to the original. And then you kind of look once the helicopter comes and say, like, who has the most points? And it's a combination of pictures taken and treasures collected. And you get a bonus if you're on the helicopter, if you're on the island going, hey, hey, right? You know, like you maybe you'll win, but chances are you're not going to get enough points to win. So you get more choices right from the beginning and you're running around and there's different ways to score because there's different types of treasures. And so there's just a little more decision making there. It's nothing deeply complicated and you could play it with a kid where they're just going to collect whatever they collect. And then at the end, they'll be like, hey, did I win or not? But if you want to be a little more strategic, you can go for a certain color or try to knock people over to steal their stuff. Because when you knock someone else over, you get one of their treasures. So you can be watching other people and be like, okay, I see Spencer's collecting blue and I want to collect blue. So I'm going to try to knock him over because chances are he'll give me a blue. And right, you can play at that level if you want, but you really don't have to. So that's sort of like the theme and the general scoring and what you need to do. But what we did for the gameplay is instead of rolling a die and moving and the die tells you how far you went, you have two cards, two action cards. On your turn, you play one of them. It has a number on it. You move that many spaces and then it has some sort of action like flicking a marble or turning a couple trees on the path or, you know, doing something like that. And then you draw a new card and that's basically it. So you don't have a lot of choices, but you still have a choice and you can kind of keep the high numbered card to get back to the helicopter at time. Or you can say like, ooh, I get to flick a marble, but no one's in position now this turn. So I'll use this one instead. And you can also gamble since everyone only has two cards, like in a 3-player game, there's only 4 cards they could play like when it's not your turn. So you're like, I'm going to end here and it's kind of dangerous, but I'm going to guess they don't have a card to hurt me, right? If someone had 6 cards, they're going to have a card to hurt you. And that's basically it. You play a card, you do the thing, you draw a card. Couple other twists on there, nothing very major. If you get knocked over, like I said, you have to give one of your treasures to the person who knocked you over, but you get a souvenir card. The original game had these very take that cards, like take another turn or no, you didn't steal it or move someone 3 spaces. And we carried those on with the souvenir card because it is the world's greatest theme park and you're having a beautiful day. So there's plenty of souvenirs. And so it's very tongue in cheek. You get knocked over and you're on the ground and you lost a treasure. You're like, oh, hey, what's that? Look, look, it's a souvenir selfie stick. And you pick it up. And these are the secret cards that let you do like unexpected things either to other players or on your turn or take these sort of big turns. And so, yes, you've lost a treasure, but you get this little treat of having a special surprise that no one else knows. And we have found that people are perfectly fine given the lightness of the game. Like, ah, I lost a treasure. What did I get? Ooh, that's going to be fun. And then they enjoy like two turns later getting to do something unexpected. So even if you're losing, you've got more fun cards to do something fun later. And the whole game takes maybe 45 minutes. With just the base game, because there are expansions, which I can gladly talk about, because we're excited about those. But yes. So yes. It's 2 to 4. It's 2 to 4 players. That's the base game. You land on the island. You get the 3 pictures. You get the treasures. You run off.
Fun.
Awesome.
Well, I'm sold already.
Thank you. One sale. Here we go. one at a time. So... we got excited because we're like, we could knock this over, we could knock that over, and we had a lot of ideas and we're thinking of different things. And so right from the start, the Kickstarter, which starts April 3rd, which is 1 week from today, from when we're recording. I don't know when this will come out, but hopefully.
Yes. So this will go out the day. It's Wednesday, right?
It'll be Tuesday. It'll start. So it's going out Wednesday.
Okay. Yes. We'll be the day after it launches.
Fantastic. So... right. So the base game, which is on Kickstarter and is on Kickstarter right now, April 3rd it started, and that's $60. It'll be $70 retail, but it's $60 right now. That's 4 players, about 45 minutes, takes up a good part of your dining room table. You'll be very happy with it. But if you're like,
well, $60, that's a great deal for like the components that you're getting.
Right. Yeah. That's going to be a good production.
Yeah.
We wanted to kind of make, you know, it took a while to find that sweet spot between what we could put in the box and the physical box size and what we could charge people. And we would like to make money when we sell it, not lose money. And trying to put that all together, and it's 45 minutes and it's a lighthearted game. We want it to be very giftable to kids. And so we ended up at $70, again, 60 on the Kickstarter. And we're pretty happy when you see it set up with the 7 trees and the 6 marbles and the giant idol and the 20, I have to do this math every time, like 28 by 17 inch by 5.5 inch tall footprint, like full color printing. Wow. It's breathtaking. By the time this comes out, we will have shown all the like renderings on there. And actually my wife and I spent much of today painting our prototype. The way that it's going to manufacture is going to be on clear plastic, and they're going to print on the underside so that the printing won't scrape off because it's printed under and you can see through it. It's almost like it's encased.
Wow.
So you can scrape it and scratch it and it's all under and it won't do it. So they sent us clear ones to show what it was going to be like, which is great. Except these are the ones that we want to feature in our Kickstarter, and they're clear. So it's like, look at our invisible islands, right? Like, which is like invisible things aren't really good to video. So I have had actually a wonderful day. I've really loved it. I have been painting the islands, like painting waves and painting sand and paths.
Wow.
And it's actually been a really great way to sort of double check, like, are all these spaces the right size? Are these connected? Because when you're hand painting stuff, you kind of notice everything. And so it's allowed us to tweak a few of the spaces and the graphics to make them work a little better. All right. Interesting side note. So if you go onto the Kickstarter page right now, you'll see the hand painted prototype. And this is the one that's going on a road show. It's going on a tour for the month of April.
Yes. And so where can people find those locations where the tour will be going?
You can go to restorationgames.com and there'll be a link from the website. Because the prototype is a lot of plastic and a lot of very particular expensive plastic, and because it's hand-painted, it's several thousand dollars to make a prototype. So normally with a Kickstarter, if you've got a traditional board game, you send 5, 10, 15 copies out to reviewers and you might say, well, it's not final graphics, but here's the game, and everyone knows. You know, we can't spend $90,000 making prototypes and sending them out to reviewers. So we have one, one and a half, right? And because I have a clay model in my porch, which it's like different types. It's like tennis or something. While the marbles roll a little bit slower on clay, like it's like you get a feel for the court. So we got this one of a kind one that we're sending out on a roadshow. J.R. Honeycutt, who's a restoration team member, said, like, why don't I just take it around? And so starting at PAX East in Boston this upcoming weekend, he and I and some other people of the team are going to be showing it. And then he's going to pack it up and he's driving to like 30 locations in 28 days. He's a madman.
Wow.
And you can go. It goes mostly in the down the East Coast and to about like Tennessee, Kentucky, and then it cuts over to Ohio, down to Indiana, and then down to Texas, where it'll be ending near the end of the Kickstarter. Yeah, woo, Texas!
Which is, we will be present when it comes here. It's going to be at Madness Games and Comics, a store that we highly, highly praise on this show and all of our social media accounts. Mm-hmm. But also another place in Dallas that we've never been to. Common Ground Games, I think, is what it's called. So we'll have to check that out, too.
Common Ground Game, yeah, April 28th, and Madness on April 27th, near the end of the Kickstarter. So if you go to the website, we're saying where it's going to be. So we're asking people, because this is such a one-of-a-kind prototype, you know, we've play-tested it internally, but we're looking for all the feedback we can get. We've got stretch goals for the Kickstarter and special cards and unlocks, and JR is going to have all of that, and we're asking people to play. Like, I would say the game is 95% done, but we want that last 5% to go from, like, great to super great. And so if you have time or you want to see it or you're not sure you want to pledge or you want to see how big it is and we're in your area, swing by, play the game, say, I like this, I didn't like this. Like, give us your notes. You know, we'll tweak cards, we'll edit stuff. And so the final cards are due to the factory at the end of May. And that gives us all of May to kind of, after the Kickstarter's over, after we get that feedback, to kind of tighten everything up and send it off. It's different. And I like that we're doing something different. It's one of those things about, you know, necessity leads to invention, right? Like, we only have one prototype. What are we going to do? Like, drive it around, turn it into he's got a concert t-shirt. We've got a rental car with decals on the side. It's like, we're doing it up.
I feel like it's just so fitting with the brand of Restoration Games. Cause the idea of taking this on a roadshow like that, it sounds like, you know, the traveling exhibits, the museums of old, how it was always moving from city to city, this certain kind of special thing from Egypt or whatever they were bringing from the other countries.
Yeah.
And it would just kind of tour through the nation. And so I that's what a great fit with Restoration Games.
Yeah, it's kind of very 19th century, isn't it? Like the traveling roadshow, like, see the exotic ancient artifacts from the mysterious East. Right. In this case, it's yes. See a man from Texas drive a rental car with a plastic island, which doesn't quite have the same draw. But yeah, I mean, like, unless
he gets like mutton chops and some
a top hat.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
I know he might do this, actually. I might mention it to him, but
If he doesn't like it, it wasn't my idea.
Okay. It was my idea. That's fine.
Okay.
Oh, like, the website right now has a picture of the car with the decals on it, or a car. It's abduction. Oh. It's not the rental car. Like, we didn't buy a car. Although, that's our ultimate stretch goal. JR has been telling us for a year we're going to make $5 million on the Kickstarter. And I can say right now, I don't think we're making $5 million on the Kickstarter. But he has been saying it and he has been enjoying it. And if we get to $5 million, Restoration Games is buying him a car. Because we said it jokingly like a year ago, like, fine, $5 million will buy you a car. And it's become his personal goal to get a free car. Good for him. So that's our last stretch goal. We're like, we don't know what we're going to do in between, but here is the last one. So I'm trying to tell him.
Okay, Rob.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell him, like, you're probably not getting a car. But so.
Well, now you've put it out there, and now all of our listeners know as well that is a stretch goal.
Yeah,
so guys, go to Kickstarter, find Fireball Island, help make JR's dreams come true.
To get a car. And we will buy him a car. It won't be one of those jokes like, ah, here's a little toy car. Like, no, we'll buy him a car. I mean, it's not going to be like a Tesla, but, you know, be a nice Corolla or something, or, you know, I have no idea.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, we were talking about, I had teased expansions.
Yes. Tell me about those.
Let's talk expansions. So there are three expansions available at launch. The first one is called The Wreck of the Crimson Cutlass. And it is, in fact, a separate island with a pirate ship that has crashed upon it. It is not the size of the main island. It is about 12 inches square and 3 inches tall. That's the actual shipwreck. But there's a big plastic mast that's near it with a crow's nest. Now, you can get to the island if you go into a cave on the main island. You can pop out on a cave on the pirate island or vice versa. And you can collect a picture there, one of your three pictures you need. But it also has gold nuggets as a special treasure, which are worth points at the end. But the cool part about gold nuggets is you can spend them on your turn to play not one, but both of your action cards back to back. So you can get double turn. So you can do lots of unexpected stuff if you've got a couple gold nuggets in your card. You can just keep them for the treasure at the end. But if you get the perfect sort of, you know, pair, you could be like, ooh, I could have a killer turn and actually probably get more points than just keeping this nugget, or do a lot of surprising things like do this, turn this, launch a marble, haha, knock three people over and, you know, get their three treasures. So but the mast, which has the crow's nest at the top, is one of those carnival things where it's sort of barely balanced. And as the game goes on through various ways, I won't get bogged down in details. You put black marbles, which are cannonballs, in there. And when you get somewhere between one and four, it will lean over and spill the cannonballs onto the deck of the ship, and they will spray out across the ship. There are cannons you can turn to try to protect yourself. They'll spray on the ship, over the rails of the ship, down onto the island itself. And so if you play your cards right, and there are a couple people out there trying to get gold nuggets, you might knock two, three people over all at once and just get like sort of a massive amount of treasure from them as they're trying to raid the pirate ship.
I wish you could see our faces right now. We are trying so hard to contain
every ounce
of emotion.
Look, it's just, you know, it just sounds fun. Like, this was a game. I do a lot of games where I do these legacy games, and I enjoy them tremendously, and I think very seriously about theme, and I think about what the story wants to communicate and player involvement and identification care. This is like, how can I knock people over with marbles, right? Like, this was just like this wonderful dessert or this sort of wonderful counterpoint to games. Games are great. And I love that games can go from the very serious to the very light to, you know, the cerebral to the silly. This is in the silly range.
Everybody needs a silly game.
It is a silly. Yeah. So that's The Wreck of the Crimson Cutlass. So in addition to all these, the games, there's more cards that come in your card deck, more action cards. And so there's other stuff that, you know, it rounds it out. There is a second expansion called The Last Adventurer. And the premise of The Last Adventurer is there's a guy who's been on the island since the original Fireball Island.
Oh, man.
And he is basically just like a walking piece of jerky. Like, he is just tough. He just, like, eats bullets, right? Like, that is sort of, like, his type of thing. And as I said before, like, your characters in the main game are these hapless tourists. And in The Last Adventurer, you get his figure, which enables the game to go up to a fifth player and all the cards that would go through it. But he also comes with a couple things. The good news is he comes with player powers. It's like the 80s movie where he comes and he's like, come with me if you want to live, right? Like, he knows the island. So instead of being like, I'm just on vacation, you're like, you get this cool power. It's like you have an instant 80s montage and suddenly you're like, I'm ready for the island, right? Now you've got this cool power that lets you do something. But being an 80s adventure, he also comes with two things. One, we have a foam boulder about the size of a golf ball that likes to come out of caves and attack people. So it doesn't live in a cave. Like, if you play a card that says roll the boulder, you pick one of the caves on the island and you put the boulder on and you just give it a little flick. And if you knock people over, everyone you knock over gives you, we're still tweaking it, but two treasures, because it's hard. But this thing just bounces everywhere. It's like a big Nerf foam boulder. And then on the other side, or not on the other side, on the west side of the island, as I like to call it, there you get eight small green marbles, which represent snakes, because why'd it have to be snakes?
And, yes.
And these just live on the island, and you can play cards to flick them, but also they're positioned in such a way that other marbles that will roll by them will knock into them, and you'll get this cascade of anywhere from 2 to 8 snakes rolling down one side of the mountain. And if snakes touch you, you get poison tokens. And at the start of your turn, if you have a poison token, instead of playing a card from your hand, you discard a poison token and you just play the top card off the deck. So you might be like, I just need to move 2 steps. Oh, I played a run card. I'm going to run 10 steps up the mountain. That's I'm a little delirious from the venom. I may have heat stroke. It's hard to say. So you get snakes and you get a boulder, you get the last adventurer, you get the player powers. And then the last expansion, it's a little bit more whimsical, at least in name, like everything else has been deadly serious, is we have one which is called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Bees. And this has 2 main things, which if you've been paying attention to the expansion, you would know it's a Crouching Tiger and Hidden Bees, because we told you in the title. Do you remember the game Ants in the Pants?
Yes.
Okay. So it's this big plastic, not big plastic, about the size of a clothespin, maybe a little smaller, plastic ant. It was ant shaped roughly. And you push it down. And then when you let it go, with the leg sort of popped up and it sprung up in the air. We made a little tiger that kind of works the same way. And this becomes a skill shot. So you can play a card that says launch the tiger. I can take the tiger, kind of line it up, push his tail, and try to leap on the island and just tackle whoever I hit. Or I may accidentally hit the snakes, and then the snakes roll down with the tiger. And it's just, it's a big zoo explosion of snakes and tigers and stuff. So the tiger's a skill shot because there's someplace on the island where the marbles won't hit you, but the tiger can hit you anywhere. But it's a tough shot. It's a tough shot. I will say that. And then the last thing, the very last thing we're offering from, you know, in the initial launch is there's a beehive filled with 10 tiny, it's either 8 or 10, small yellow marbles, which are bees. And you pour those into the head of the idol up the top. And I don't know if I mentioned this before, but the idol has 3 mouths. And so I think I said this. And so the bees just spill out of all the mouths and roll down. And much like the snakes, if a bee touches you, you get bee stung. And now you move more slowly, which is going to make it hard to collect the treasures that you want and get back to the airplane, because you're just swollen with bee stings. So you got bees, you got snakes, you got boulders, you got tigers, you've got a pirate ship, you've got gems, and that's before we even unlock the Kickstarter goals. We have 100 cards planned out that we could add to the game. We have 50 cards we could add to the game. We have 100 that are guaranteed to be in the game, and 50 more we can add. I did the math wrong. We got 50 cards we could add to the game, which are just either more souvenirs, plus we have a number of other things that we're excited about. And the way we're planning it is, if, you know, as we go with the stretch goals, we'll just be throwing in more cards and more cards. And whoever backs the game, we're just going to ship it with the deck for free to the Kickstarter backers. Like, hey, you backed the game. Here's the deck of cards. You know, we unlock 30 of them. There you go. Have fun with it. So we're hoping to have like a fun, you know, a fun April with Fireball Island. And that's where it is. Thanks for letting me talk at you.
That's amazing.
I loved it. I loved hearing all of the, I mean,
well,
the
and creativity. Your descriptions of everything are very engaging.
Like, I'm envisioning the bees coming out of the mouse, like, what is it, the mummy or something, where like the mouth opens up and all the flies.
Yeah. I mean, they are yellow marble, so you have to kind of use your imagination. Mm-hmm. But I, in my head, you know, every time I pour them in, I go, bees, right? I say it, and that everyone, yes, we know they're bees. You did that last time you poured them through.
That's just so great.
So wait, you said they're smaller than the other?
Yeah, marbles? I mean, the regular marbles are 16 millimeter and the other ones are 10 millimeter. So they're small and large marbles. And so the ones that are on the island, there's 6 ember marbles, and then there's up to 4 of the actual fireballs. And then the cannonballs are 16 millimeters, the standard size marble, not the big marbles you'd think of, but sort of standard. Mm-hmm. And then the mini marbles are the bees and the snakes. Actually, if you think of regular dice, a regular size die is about the same size as the marble. It's obviously squared instead of round. And if you think of mini dice, those are kind of like what the mini marbles are. Occasionally the mini marbles will knock you over if you get like 3 snakes that hit you, but mostly they just roll around you and So that what you do is after everything's done and all the chaos has stopped, you look, it's like, okay, does anyone touching a snake? You're like, you are, like, you're poisoned. So if they just hit you and keep rolling, you're fine. It's if they hit you and sort of get stuck in your feet, or they push you against a rock and then they get jammed, that then they're biting you. So, you know, you might have 8 snakes roll by you, but chances are you're going to only have one of them that sticks and bites you.
Gotcha. So other than, like, the cards and the car, are there other stretch goals? Like, I don't know what you would upgrade, but, like, ooh, maybe a glass island.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, just solid glass shards.
Solid glass.
Yeah.
Stained glass.
We have the usual behind-the-scenes sort of, like, pile of stretch goals that we're going to keep some of them secret, but some of them are, we're starting to tease. Obviously, there's the car at the end, but then another thing we might do is Justin and I, like, we're the, you know, the owners of Restoration. We're both big D&D people. If we get to a certain stretch goal, we're going to write a custom 5th edition D&D adventure that you can play on the island.
That is so cool.
And both of Justin and I are big cooks, and we might, if we get to a stretch goal, finally to see who is the bigger cook. We're going to have some sort of public showdown or something. And we have that. We have a little bit of making the game a little better, but at the price point we're at, we've kind of hit our limits to sort of make it better. So we've got a few things we can do early on to try to, like, move it up, but mostly is where it is. And we're going to have other add-ons that you can unlock that if you want to pay extra money, you might be able to just pay, you know, $10 extra and get something sort of the people who really want to trick it out. One example would be, like, the figures are just different colors, but we're looking into unlocking, like, hey, I like this, but I want custom painted figures for an extra $10. Mm-hmm. And then you can buy that pack. So we're trying to balance between stuff we make better in the general game, stuff we give away for free, stuff we just do that's fun and silly, and things that you can do that you can buy if you want to, you know, sort of have the deluxe experience. And we're trying to do a mix of all those.
Gotcha. So Laura and I have committed, prior to this conversation, before we knew about all of the awesomeness, that this was going to be our game to back on Kickstarter for the year. And when I say back, I'm thinking now we're going to go all in. So do you have a ballpark estimate of what we need to be preparing for?
Yeah, sorry, I should have told you that. Like I said, we're going to have two basic tiers, which is $60 gets you the base game and $130 gets you the whole kit. Like the game and all 3 expansions, plus any free cards that we end up giving you. The retail of that, and all of this will be for sale in retail later. So if you are listening to this podcast 6 months from now, you can go out and buy it. It will be $150. So it's $20 savings. There will be shipping charges. I do not have those at my fingertips. They will be pretty much industry standard for shipping. The game is large, but it's not particularly heavy. And so, yeah, it's $130 for all 4, the game and the 3 expansions, plus whatever else, the goodies that we throw into it.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, I just got the thumbs up from Laura.
We're in. Yeah. I'm looking right now, the tour schedule is up on Restoration Games website right now. So I see no reason why it won't be up when this podcast is live in a week. The game will be shipping, if all goes well, right around Essen at the end of October. And if all goes okay, it'll be shipping closer to the end of November. We really want to have it in retail for Black Friday because we think this will be a good holiday purchase for people. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to get the games to the Kickstarter backers first and then in retail second. If we get closer and closer to Black Friday, the difference between Kickstarter and regular people will get smaller and smaller and smaller. But that is our goal, which is why we're running it now in April. This is our last chance to sort of do this and get everything off to the factory to get it to us. We will have previews at Gen Con, and we will have this road trip, and then we will start to get early prototypes, you know, with like sample graphics or rough graphics or unpainted this or, you know, and so we will start to have these different prototypes that we're going to take to Origins and Dice Tower Con and Gen Con. And so we can show people, you know, they can see it live if they miss the tour.
Well, we'll see it at the tour, then we'll see it at Dice Tower Con.
Right.
That'll be awesome. And that sounds like a really good timeline for a game with this amount of production. That's really reasonable.
Yeah, well, they already have the Iwin files and all the plastic files. And like I said, they just sent it to us, and we're going to be making some little tiny tweaks, and we're finishing up the graphics, and all of that needs to be done basically now to make our deadline. But then the cardboard and the paper can follow a little bit later, because that doesn't take as long. So that's in May. Yeah. So it's like February, March, we have to have the plastics done so they could show it to us. And then May, we had to have the cardboard and paper done. And that keeps us right on track to getting where we need to go. Not to get into the fun and exciting part of game production, which is like international shipping and freight and Panama Canal and dock working. And that's not the glamour. That's not the reason people are in the game industry. So I'll just skip all that part.
Okay. Well, so that pretty much rounds out everything for Fireball Island. What, if you even want to start thinking about this, what will be up next for y'all? Or can you tease anything?
Well, we do have two other things that we're releasing this year. We have Downforced, which was a very popular game for us last year. It's a racing game, has a double-sided board with two racetracks and six player powers, and we're releasing a Downforce expansion called Danger Circuit that will be out in June or July, which is another double-sided board and six more player powers. The double-sided board is not just, here's a new oval, like we tried to put some new rules or twists or things on each side of the board. So if you played Downforce, you can spend $20 and get a new board and six new powers. And then we have another game coming out, which is also a lighter game and quite a twee enjoyable game. And it's called Dinosaur Tea Party.
What?
Yeah, right. That is the absolute, appropriate response to hearing that. Sort of a choking, startled laugh and saying, what? Right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we're looking to evoke from people. A Dinosaur Tea Party is a game where you play a dinosaur at a tea party. You are a British dinosaur, and you are dreadfully, dreadfully embarrassed because you've forgotten everyone's name. So you are basically, it's a light game of deduction where you're asking people different questions like, excuse me, are you perchance wearing a hat? And right. And then you would say, no, I do not have a face for a hat. And you're like, oh, okay. And you put a little token out saying you're not a hat. And there's a grid of dinosaurs, beautifully illustrated, 20 dinosaurs, all having tea. Some of them have jewelry. Some of them have hats. Some of them have brought a pet, which conveniently enough is just a smaller dinosaur. Some of them are eating. Some of them are drinking. And you're trying to be the first one to sort of suss out who the different people are playing. There's a couple different twists. But it is a game for like 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, casual game players, and people who just like putting on really bad fake British accents while pretending to be a dinosaur drinking tea, which we think is that's an under-leveraged market, and we're hoping to sort of be – there's some real empty white space there or whatever they call it in industry that we're going to try to stake our claim.
Well, yes, I believe that is a great assessment of the market.
And there you go.
I wholeheartedly support this.
That is a wonderful. You will fit right into Dinosaur Tea Party.
But then you have to do it like a dinosaur. Hello, I'm a dinosaur.
There you go.
And I'm going to drink some tea.
Yes. Sorry, you sound like Peppa Pig's dad.
Yeah, well, actually, you sound exactly like Yorick, who is our T-Rex.
Our
T-Rex is named Yorick, and he looks gruff on the outside, but he absolutely looks forward to high tea every Wednesday at 4. It is the highlight of his week, and he looks gruff. But if you ask him, he's like, oh, I love today. It's my favorite day of the week, right?
I just got it, a T-Rex.
Yeah, a T-Rex.
Welcome to the podcast.
Actually, none of us thought of that pun until after it was done. So just to show you.
That is absolutely charming.
Yeah, so it's sort of a multiplayer guess who, right, where you're just trying to guess. And there's a couple different twists, like three of the dinosaurs have a bit of a quirk. They're kind of fibbers. Right, so one just says no to everything. Are you wearing a hat? No. Oops. Or do you have a pet? No. and so you can be like, wait, who are you? Wait a minute. You're this one, right? Because you keep saying no. We have also included in the rule book a recipe for cucumber tea sandwiches and for oatmeal shortbread. So you can serve those while you're playing Dinosaur Tea Party. So it comes with a tea party recipes.
That's adorable. Yeah. I love that. You were saying that about the new boards for Downforce. I believe I saw some pictures of those at, was it MeepleCon in Las Vegas?
Gamma. I don't know exactly where. I think Gamma.
Oh, yes, that's right. That, yeah. Those were the same weekend. Yes, Gamma. I saw pictures of, oh, man.
That turn
the
around.
One with the, that has like three or four loops in it.
Yeah, it's a race course where we designed loops into it, which I'm pretty sure is not a good idea for a racetrack to have, not like a loop, like an
hazardous to your health.
Yeah, it's not like an upside down loop. It's just like, you know, you're going to go around and, you know, you're going to basically T-bone the other people who are coming into the loop as you're exiting the loop in the real world. Mm-hmm. And our version is like, oh, space is blocked. You got to stop. So yes. We've got like two loops and split routes. And then on the other side, it's this switchback with the road is crumbled and there's debris in the road. And so some lanes are, I have dangerous spaces where you can travel through them, but you can't end in them. And so like,
oh, I haven't seen that side of the board.
Yeah, no, that's great. It actually, from a distance, the art is so cool on that I like looked at it. I'm like, is that like a 3D model? Like it really looks like the road is in canyons and stuff like that. The artist did just a great job.
That's so neat.
Those are our two games this year, and we will be announcing more, but like we're all focused in on Fireball Island right now.
Understandable.
Yeah. Gotcha. So you said earlier that like you did a poll for Fireball or for, you know, games that people would like to see restored. And you said that Fireball Island was the most requested one. Now, can you give away, I don't remember if the results were published, but can you give away any like of the top requested ones without saying, yeah, we're going to do these or not?
Well, I mean, I can tell you there seems to be a very big swell of games from the late 70s through like the mid 90s. Just like because I think most gamers now are in their 40s or at least our fans. And so we're just getting a lot from their childhood. So we see Thunder Road, we see Omega Virus, we see Dark Tower, we see, I'm drawing a blank. There's like two more that we just see again and again. And a lot of those were owned by Hasbro, and a lot of the rights are very tied up and very complicated. And we don't say officially no to anything. I guess some stuff with a license. It's like,
right.
It's just like, look, we're not going to get the license and the rights and this and that. And so, but a lot of these other ones, well, we can't say no, we'll never get it. They're just very complicated. When they're in-house designs. And so we're looking at everything. We're going to try to do a mix of sort of big ideas and smaller games like Dinosaur Tea Party, which is a remake of a Parker Brothers game called Who's It, which was a 1976 game, which did not involve dinosaurs or tea whatsoever.
I love that. I love the...
But it could involve a British accent if you wanted it to.
It could have, right. It was very proper to have a British accent.
Well, so we're going to help you out here, Rob.
Yeah, we've got some ideas for you.
We're
going to
give you some ideas.
Okay.
And if they haven't been mentioned, well, you better jot these down because they're real winners.
Okay. Okay. Hold on. I got a pen.
All right. You got a pen? Okay.
Yeah.
Laura, why don't you start?
Okay. So I remember seeing a commercial for this game.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Shark Attack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It had this like, it looked like several racing lanes almost, but they were blue, different shades of blue. So it was like water.
Mm-hmm.
And you had your people and they were swimming away from this shark. And then the shark would chomp, chomp, chomp. And they would move back toward the shark's mouth. And you were having to try to move your person away from the shark's mouth.
Yeah, there was a big plastic shark almost. It was almost like being on a record player, right? There was
cool.
Right. The shark was sort of on a, attached to the middle of the board and opened its mouth and the board went around and you ended up into the, a lot of these big old plastic, you know, childhood toys are ones we get a lot of. I think they're delightful. So yes. Okay. Shark Attack. That's come up before.
Okay.
That's one of my ideas.
Mine, and we can do, since we kind of agree on another one, so I'll go to my specific one.
Okay.
Speaking of plastic, is 1313 Dead End Drive.
Yeah.
This is the one that's, it's kind of like a mousetrap kind of thing where you got these different gadgets, but it's like different ways to murder
different ways to So the original game was called 13 Dead End Drive. And then there was a remake called 13 Dead End Drive, which I helped work on at Hasbro. So the nice thing about being part of Restoration Games, I'm so old that I can basically say, let's restore something that I worked on back in the day. So I didn't work on 13 Dead End Drive, but I was in a cubicle next to it. So I'm very familiar. I mean, it's got props. It's got murder. It's a elimination. What's interesting is you play, I think, a couple different characters, but no one, you can move any character. So you want to get away with the most money, but if you just move your own characters, everyone will know who you're playing and they'll kill them. So you move other characters that aren't you, that might be controlled by no one or might be someone else. And you're trying to basically keep it quiet who you're really controlling so that other players' characters get killed and then your characters can run away with the loot.
Oh, so there's like a hidden role element.
Yeah, there's a hidden role. I think there's probably 10 or 12 people around the table. It's an inheritance. Like, I think you're all trying to, like, you're at the reading of the will and you have to get the inheritance. That's right. And you have, this is a little fuzzy. I haven't thought about it in 15 years or so, but you control, so I think, two different characters, but on your turn, you can move anyone. And if you're standing in front of the suit of armor, you can make it fall over on you. And then the piggy bank can fall on your head. And it's got like cardboard and plastic sort of like fireball and like these sort of death traps.
Yeah, and it's another one of those that I know we had this one, and I just played with the different contraptions. Like, the ladder could fall off. Like, you could be on the ladder, and it would fall off. Or there's something to do with the staircase. And I think there was a secret passage, too, like a painting revolved.
Oh, I think so. I think it was if you were standing in front of the painting, someone could turn it around, and so you were then under the staircase, but your character was considered like, ah! You know, they were gone and out of the game. Or that character. Yeah. So what you would do is, you would move that character in front of it, and then you were hoping that someone else would activate the trap. So you wouldn't put yourself there. You would put someone you thought was someone else, but maybe you would bluff and actually put yourself there and hope that no one did it, you know, or then you'd move your other character. So it was a lot of bluffing and like hidden role sort of stuff, or hidden, what did you call it? Hidden role.
Yeah.
Who I am. Right.
That's fun.
I have fond memories of that game, so I'd love to see a redo of that.
Cool. Well, then of course there's a 70s classic, Mystery Date.
I think that might be 80s, but yeah, Mystery Date.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, that's just, I just remember people, it's just something that's out there in the zeitgeist. And so I never actually played it myself, but I just know that it has... it's known. It's
actually
well known.
I think Mystery Date was even earlier. I think it was a 60s game that was brought back
kind of
in
after,
the 80s.
Like, the dating game.
Yeah, I think it had two versions a generation apart, I think. And I think honestly neither one of them, as is, not that we couldn't restore them, I think neither one of them really does a favor to gender politics in the 21st century.
That's fair enough. Yes.
Yeah. That's probably a fair assessment there.
Yeah, but if you look if you look at Who's It, which Dinosaur Tea Party is based off of, that's a nightmare of stereotypes that we sort of worked our way around. So we try to, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean we can't do a game. It's just one of those first things we look at and say, oh, okay, can we get around this?
You could do like Mystery Date, but like dogs, puppies.
Yeah.
Or.
Yeah. Mystery Pup.
That's the first thing that came
Mystery mind. Doggo. I know someone who would buy that just on that name.
Yeah. Mystery Pup. Yeah. I like it.
Mystery Doggo.
Oh, Mystery Doggo.
There you go.
Yes. Okay. All right. Yeah. You want to introduce our last one?
All right.
One?
So this is our last one, and then we'll kind of wrap things up here. But this is one Laura and I both are like, Rob, this is the one. And that's Nightmare. Okay. Nightmare. Are you familiar with Nightmare?
Are you talking about the VHS game?
Yes.
Atmosphere?
Yes.
Okay.
Adamantly. Yep.
Okay. So you got the VHS, right? That can totally be implemented as an app.
You could.
And with the things you can do with apps, you can be randomized the events instead of the same things on a loop on a tape.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
And of course, the things, I don't remember. I know, again, I remember.
There were like three different games that they did.
Yeah.
There was like a wizard dude. Or no, there was just like a
He's more like a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was played off like the...
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And there was a witch, and then there was like this a voodoo guy.
Yeah, he looked like the emperor from Star Wars.
The
crypt keeper.
Yeah.
We saw beer and board games played that game, the first one, and then we looked up more info on the games, and you can actually find those VHS have been uploaded onto YouTube.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it right now. I looked it up on YouTube. The whole VHS is there. I've heard of this. I remember the last decade I worked on a number of DVD games, kind of like using DVD as a kind of interactive TV game was a thing that I worked on. And we were thinking of bringing Atmosphere back. We at Hasbro at the time. And I remember looking at it going, I don't think this has aged well. Right. And this was 10 years ago. And so we're happy to look at anything, but have you looked at it recently?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so are you still recommending it?
Yes, because I know what you can do, Rob. I'm putting all of the work onto you. Okay. It's your job to make it work, not mine.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. You're the idea guy.
That's right.
We just think it's funny.
Yeah. So no, don't use that guy. I mean, get a reputable.
I say make it more goofy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, hey, goofy. You know what?
Yes, more goofy.
I'm an actor. Okay. Ooh, you can just hire me. Mm-hmm.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Is this a union gig? I just trying.
No, yeah, so we like I said, we watched it on Beer and Board Games and looked those up. And I'm guessing, was Atmosphere like based in Australia? Because I remember in looking through all that stuff, there was a TV commercial in Australia advertising these games. And these people, I don't know if they were New Zealanders or Australian, but they had that accent.
Well, they do make commercials.
They make commercials there, yes.
In Australia, from what I hear.
That's right.
So that is a possibility.
I think Australia is legally allowed to make commercials now.
Yeah. So that is a possibility.
Atmosphere is an Australian horror video board game. So well done. And 1991.
Mm-hmm. Mic drop. I was right.
There you go. There was the gatekeeper. There was Khufu the mummy. There was like the.
There's a mummy.
How did we miss this? And that's the thing that could do.
Sorry,
right?
It was okay. Wait, okay. Like I'm just reading off of Wikipedia. You guys can do this, but it was rebooted as a DVD, which had a gatekeeper and a mummy version in 2004-2006.
Man, and see, like you could do an app
that had all those different ones on
you
it.
You could even
so I got to tell you.
But like because DLC it was with it.
Because it was done in 2006 at restoration, we have a soft deadline. It has to be out of print at least 15 years, so it's a little early to bring it back.
Okay.
Well, I'll be waiting.
Okay. So 2021.
By then the scary things will be like cyborgs and stuff, and we'll be able to do all like futuristic
or Tide Pods. And selfies.
Yeah, I can think of scarier things, but in the near future. But I'll leave my politics aside.
All right. Okay. Well, you have our lists, so we'll wrap this up so you can get to work. Does that sound good?
Thank you. It's 11 o'clock at night, so I'm probably more going to get to bed.
Okay.
And then get to work in the morning, and finish painting an island,
so that you can feel restored in the morning.
Oh,
I will be. Oh, really? Oof.
Okay. Yeah.
I have to tell you that.
Sitting on that.
No, I haven't been sitting on that, but I have restrained myself so much from any kind of legacy pun because I know that you hear those off the wazoo.
I think our friends have even tweeted them at you.
Yeah.
And
everyone has tweeted them at me.
Yeah, so
I'm going to a baseball game. Is it baseball game legacy? I'm like, it doesn't even make sense. You just put the word legacy at the end of something that doesn't even make sense.
Well, what's funny is, so as of this when this releases, we can talk about this, but we were included on the April Fool's joke with Bezier for New York Slice Legacy.
Yeah.
Which is like, we worked at their booth at BGGCon. I had that idea. And I talked to the guys there. I was like, you should do New York Slice Legacy. You actually eat the pizza.
And now they've got that idea.
I demand royalties.
Yeah, you demand all you want. You're not. Don't demand them from me.
All right. So, yeah, that legacy jokes are funny, but not with the guy who's responsible for legacy games.
It's a word I can't even use anymore. I'm like, well, it's nice to know that I left a imprint on the game industry. Like, I just have to go around it. So.
Well, on that note, if folks want to go around and get in touch with Restoration Games, or
if they want to not tweet you legacy jokes, where
can
they find you?
Oh, you can. It's just join the parade, right? Like, just but just I'm just asking people, up your game. Even one that hasn't been, you know, just bring something I haven't seen before.
That's fair.
You can follow Restoration Games on Twitter at Restoration Game, no S. Because that's too long a Twitter handle, and Restoration Games on Facebook and on Instagram, and our website is restorationgames.com. I am Rob Davio. That's a tricky last name. It's spelled D-A-V-I-A-U. You can follow at Rob Davio at Twitter. It's pretty much a mix of 50% cooking advice, 30% games, and 20% me kind of griping about being a middle-aged guy.
It's my perfect.
Exciting though. But but I try to be good at all of those things.
Yeah. Give very it good. 110%, Rob. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that information. And Rob, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, and I wish you success, and I look forward to meeting you both in person at Dice Tower Con.
Yeah, it'll be exciting times.
Well, and this has been a lot of fun.
It really has. And we are so excited for Fireball Island. We wish you and Restoration Games best of luck. And I'll be honest, I mean, I think this game has some outside of the gaming industry appeal. And I think you're going to do very well on your campaign.
Thank you. I am very much a glass half empty sort of person when it comes to these things, like just not counting chickens. So when this airs, I might have a very different opinion 24 hours in. But right now, I'm like, okay. I'm very New England puritanical, like, just head down, keep working the field. Winter's coming, right? And, you know, we'll see how things go.
Okay.
It works. All right. Well, and one final thing. If you want to get in touch with us, follow us. And if you can't make it to one of the touring appearances, you can live vicariously through us, because we'll go to two of them. You can follow us on Twitter at
Married with BG.
Instagram is the same thing. And Facebook is
Facebook.com/MarriedWithBG.
And our website is MarriedWithBG.com. Rob, thanks again for coming. And Laura, do you have anything else?
Nope.
And since there's nothing else, this has been episode 38 of the Married with Board Games podcast. I'm Spencer.
I'm Laura.
I'm John Lennon.
Thank you so much for listening.